Chair. Welcome back. I first would like to extend again my gratitude for the possibility to come here and share experience with you. I think this is really important for all of us to do that from time to time, to try to learn about each other's challenges and how we work with our challenges in different places. I think this is really, really good. So once again, thank you very much for this opportunity to come here, to, as Mikael said, and I have to very much agree, very beautiful country. I'm so happy to visit your country. Thank you very much for that. And what I will try to do now is to talk a bit about the regulatory and policy side of this this market. And I represent the Swedish Post and Telecom Authority, which is in charge of the regulatory business of this, of the Post, which I won't mention very much today. But it's also a very interesting market, I must say, and the telecom sector. And to put it in one way, I think what we work a lot with is to make it possible for end users to make choices. This is really, really important in the way we look at it. And this does not only mean, we've been touching upon this, it means creating a stable market. For us, this is what it means, to create a stable market that has long-term goals, which means you get stability, which makes it easier for investors to come into the market and trust the regulatory positions, trust the rules that they have to obey. But it also means that the consumers know what's going on, and we also need, even though we have many, we have a lot of operators on the market, if you don't have well-educated users, it's also very hard to make choices. You need to know, we were talking about this earlier this morning, and you have to also educate the users in a sense, so they know what and how to make the decisions that are best for them. So this is what we work a lot with, trying to make the market work in a way that that the users have a possibility to always make choices that are the most efficient for them, both from a product perspective, but also from a price perspective, so they get most for the value for their money, basically. So I did some looking around, and I think, and even though we will notice, I and Mikael, when we go back to Stockholm, that we have gone far away because we're going to a place where autumn is setting. It's getting colder and colder, and we had a lovely summer, but it's definitely over now. And we look forward to a period of darkness and coldness. So think of that when Christmas is approaching. That's what we are enduring. but it's also interesting to look at, I think, our countries from just a very simple comparison. I think it's always interesting to do a little bit. We are a bit more than 9 million people, inhabitants in Sweden. So it's a very, very small country in that respect. Whereas if I the numbers I found, are close to 50 million for South Africa. And we have a fairly large number of square kilometers compared to our population. So it's definitely the case that Sweden is a very sparsely populated country. And the people live in the southern parts, close to the coastline. You can see that on the, where it bulges out a little bit in the south, on the right-hand east side, is the capital of Stockholm. And from there and down, you see it's darker and darker reddish. And they're around those areas then. That's where people live. And the northern and western parts is, you have a lot of trees, mountains, and moose. That's basically who lives there. And but it's still people that are managing the forest. There are cities there, small cities, villages. So it's definitely so that we have a clear and difficult challenge in having a area coverage in these rural areas for us. And I think here we definitely share a challenge. And it's also interesting, one number, if you look at the table of the graph diagram, right, the mobile penetration is in percentage is actually higher in South Africa than it is in Sweden, this number. So I think this is from 2013 or 12, I'm not sure, I don't remember exactly. But it's definitely so that mobile penetration is very, very high. mean, we are working for the government, state agency, and it was mentioned earlier today as well that it's important to have a goal. Where are we going? And our Swedish government has set a strategic goal, like an agenda for the digital development in Sweden. And the top priority is that Sweden should have a world-class broadband. And the government's definition of that is that by the year 2020, 90% of all households and businesses should have access to at least 100 megabits per second, which is really high. There are lots of definitions of high speed and ultra high speed and broadband, but this is definitely fast broadband by today's standards, I would say. And this is also then connected to the fact that the Swedish state is using more and more e-services in their contact with the citizens. And if not all households and businesses have access to this, I mean, you get a team of the citizens that are outside and one part that is inside. I think an issue that we are all well aware of, but the problems you can have with that. And it's then, as we talked about earlier, not just having the access, it's also being able to use the access, both from a technical perspective, but also from a knowledge perspective. And this is one of the things that we come into. And as an absolute bottom line, that there is a universal service level of broadband that everyone should have access to 1 megabit per second. And I talked about that we are in charge of trying to make it a level playing field and make it possible for choices for the users. And this is connected to that there should be primarily a market-driven development. So this should be based on demand from users and investments from businesses that actually see business cases in this development towards this goal. And this is something that is, would be, I think, for most people, hard to think that it can be really reached up. And just to give you a quick glance of some of this, where we've come. And I will come back to how we got here, but just to show you, we are at the present state, it's more than 95% of the population that actually have access to 4G mobile telephony networks. So they can use really high-speed broadband in their mobile phones, and it's not. And this comes to the market part. There's a lot of people that actually have those subscriptions. They're active. They are all the most new phones that are sold are smartphones, and they have a 4G capability today. And if we look one way of really ensuring, you can't promise 100 megabits everywhere. I think Mika will come back to that with the mobile network. But I think with fiber, you can definitely promise that. If you have access to fiber, you will get 100 megabits. So the most, in that respect, certain way of reaching the goal of 100 megabits per household would be then the fixed network here. And we have, this is happening in parallel. And by now, there are more than 55% of the households that have access to fiber. And as I said, there is a large demand, and Mikael was mentioning some of the drivers, and I think there are. It's definitely, I think, a connection that the Netflix and HBO, the video on demand services, have had an enormous quick penetration in Sweden because there is a good infrastructure to stream video, so people are buying a lot of it. And When you start using this type of service, you get more and more interested in having more and more capacity that is stable to be able to use it. And this drives demand. So this is a spiral that's going on. And then the last square here, I will get back to, but we are working on trying to get everyone get at least this 1 megabit per second. And we are now down to less than 500 households. And I will get back to how we work with this. So it's a very, very, I mean, we would, I think by any standard and also by official standard, this is, we have come a far way, long way with this. We are really, really on the top of the line with this, I would say. And it's definitely an environment where you get, I think we talked a little bit of employment and the growth opportunities that this creates. And I think it's interesting to note that Skype, for example, which also Swedish company, Swedish inventors behind that. We have, I'm not a really good gamer, but Minecraft, is that's a lot of people of younger generations definitely use a lot, is that's a Swedish invention, and also Candy Crush, it's a company in Swedish also. That, this is, now I'm really totally emptied my knowledge about games.
Opportunities for society in having this development. I think this is really important to really underline.
this is what we do, and who we are then. We've been an authority since 1992, and it's a bit more than 280 people employed, and the majority have university graduates, and a lot of legal experts. It's a lot of it around into legal issues. We have economists that work on the efficiency side, and then of course engineers that work on the technological side, and then we have a variety of other academics as well, but these are the major groups. And something that is I think important for us is the way, I mean, of course finance is always important, but I just like to point out that we're set under the Department of Commerce, business and what's called? I lost the word. Enterprises. Thank you for that. But we are not financed through the state budget. We're financed by fees from the operators, and they amount to about, I think that's about a billion rands if you translate it approximately. And that's the total. From the direct charges from the operators is about 450 million rand, I think. And but the other part of the money, and this is really important, I think, also because that's money that does come from the state budget, but we are channeled through us the export authority and used for making investments for security reasons primarily in the network, both redundancy in lines and the network, and also we invest in security for fraud and that type of infringements in the system. And we have also money that we use for development of equipment that makes the ICT sector accessible for people that have different types of disabilities. And this goes with everyone should be included in the group that can access the internet and all the services. And they can also, of course, be of great help. If you have a disability, this is definitely a tool. When we get into e-health and things like that, this is really something that is very powerful to help there. Do you have any questions, please? Yeah?
Thank you. On that slide, on your employees, you have 280 employees. Is it in Sweden?
It's in Sweden.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all located in, almost all of them are located in Stockholm. We have a small, I think I'll mention it in the end, but there is a small unit of the postal regulatory part that is sitting outside of Stockholm. They have an office where there are 1,500 people that are going through mail that has been lost, or rather it's found, but it hasn't found its correct receiver. So it's not totally lost, but doesn't, and you don't know who you can send it back to either. And they have the authority to open these letters, which of course the postal service in general is not allowed to do. But they can do that, and then by looking into it, they try to figure out where it comes from or where it's going. And they are not located in Stockholm, but otherwise you have everything in Stockholm. Yes.
Just a light-hearted comment on the postal service. Doesn't Father Christmas live in Uppsala in Sweden?
Sorry, I didn't hear.
Father Christmas, doesn't he live in Uppsala in Sweden?
Yeah. So we but I think their letters, they usually reach there. Their receivers. That's a known address for everyone, I think. That's a good point. I lost track a little bit of it. I could also, if you're interested, I could just mention that we're not going to talk about the postal regulatory situation, but we've done a lot of work with the postal system as well, and it's one interesting consequence of opening up the postal system for deregulation and then competition side is that we are now out of post offices. They're all gone. And that's also scary for people in general, until they start to realize that it's so much better access, at least in most of the cities where most people people live, because the postal service has moved into department stores, gas stations, and grocery stores that are, instead of being open between 10 and 5 o'clock on weekdays, they're open between 8 and 10 in the evening every day, more or less. So you can access your parcels that you order via the internet in a much simpler way. And you can also find stamps and actually post your letters there if you want to. So it's quite an interesting development, but I think it's been a cultural challenge for everyone, that not having a post office to go to, because it's a very secure thing for a lot of people that know that you have a post office, that's the state. But when you go to gas stations, wow, I really trust this. But and I think that's part of our job then, to make sure that it actually works, even though it's not. We have had a nice yellow sign with a trumpet on, that was the postal sign, and it's, you don't find it that easily anymore. But that was a parenthesis. So.
Okay, thank you. Chairperson, I'm interested on that again. I was just about, because you just answered me quickly. So, in South Africa, we are very gender sensitive, and we take into consideration especially women and people with disability. So I just want, I'm interested on your component, especially on those two issues.
I mean,
gender and disabled people, if you are staff.
In our staff?
Yes.
It's
your employees. So
it's very close to 50-50 women and men in the whole of the authority, and I think in the group management group, which consists of I think 12 or 13 people, it's more women than men. But our director general is a man since 4 years ago now, and the previous one that was director general for I think 8 years, she was a woman. So I think it's a pretty good mix, and it's a fairly. We also have a good mix of newcomers to Sweden that have come from both as refugees from different parts of the world that have moved to Sweden and that have come into to work in our authority. And they're also, I mean, I think, to be honest, I don't think I can say about disability because I don't think of it, but I know that there are a couple of people in that is obvious to me, that when they're wheelchairs, so I know that they definitely have a disability. But otherwise, everyone just functions in the environment where we work. So I don't really think about it, to be honest. But I'm sure our department for the personnel or the human resources department have statistics over it. But I don't have it on top of my head. We've talked about, and I know Mikael is keen on that, it is important that you harmonize how we work, and because this creates possibilities. I mean, you've shown those low-cost smartphones, and possibilities to create low-cost equipment comes with a scale in production. It's one of the major things. And to have scale, you need more than one market. Sweden is a very small market. We're just 9 million people, a little bit more. You can't make anything and make money of it if you're a global producer. So we have to. It's very important. We're a small open economy. We have to adapt or try to at least influence what is we think is good. And one way of doing this is to be. We are a group of all the European Union national regulators of telecom that are part of what is called the body of European regulators for electronic communication, BEREC. And this was established in 2009. And what we do is we have annual quarterly meetings and a lot of working groups studying issues that how to develop our regulation in a way to make the common market of the European Union work in a more efficient way for the telecom sector. And this year we are the chair of this organization, this body. And it's been a very intense year. Our director general has been very busy with this, and we've had a large group of people that have been working very intensely with this chairmanship. And beginning of next year, we're handing over the chairmanship to Portugal, so they take over the lead down. So then we are outgoing chair, which means that they're still on the board, but not the same intense attention as it is to be chair. But I think this is really important, because it's in Europe, a lot of the legislation comes from the European Union, and it's proposed by the European Commission, and once it has kind of passed through certain stages of the system, it's very hard to change it. Then it becomes law, and then we have to implement it, regardless of what it looks like, more or less. So it's so important that we kind of try to influence the way the lawmakers think in the beginning, because all of them, Sweden is, Europe is a lot of countries, they all look a little bit differently. And this then is supposed to have a legal system that fits all these countries. And for us, as a regulator of the Swedish market, it's really important to inform and educate the commission that makes the legal suggestions what it looks like in our part of the world. And this is one of the things that is important for all these countries, of course. And BEREC is a way where we kind of organize our thoughts around this. And we then formulate what we call opinions that are valid for all of the countries' regulators. And then this goes into the machinery of lawmaking in Europe. Just to say a few words, I will not dwell too long on this, but it's just the two parts that we work with, really. It's regulation, which is, of course, what it sounds like, that we make rules and how to the market to behave. But the other thing is of having the possibilities of making choices is the educational part and the support for the ones that have more difficulties in reaching the market and being able to make choices. So here we call it promotion. And this is what we do a lot. We make a lot of spend a lot of the resources and time on this. And it has to do then with servicing disabilities, making sure the networks are robust. And we do some financing of broadband in areas where the market is not enough. I will come back to that. And we also have an association that we call the Broadband Forum, which is I also will come back to. And we also get special assignments from the government every now and then that we have to work with. And just to, I mean, there are more slides on this, and I won't go through everything, but just to show how we are divided to work for a long-term goal, value for consumers of the services. And we have a consumers department, competition department that look at the market balance, the network and information security department, and the postal department, of course. And one really the biggest department is the spectrum department that do the services of the spectrum, because this is really, really one of the important functions. And they have become the largest department headcount wise. And as I said, we follow the EU law. We have to, it comes into the Swedish law. But in Sweden, there is the Swedish law that is guiding us, or what we have to follow. And we are an authority reporting to the Ministry of Enterprise, Energy and Communications. Mm-hmm. So it's an infrastructure ministry, but also for promoting, and the government in place have been very promoting of making it easier for smaller enterprises to cut through the red tape in order to work more easily without too much bureaucracy in there, in the dealings with the government issues, for example. So I think this is the reasoning behind trying to group these together. And our minister, she has the, which is a woman also, by the way, is heading the infrastructure of electricity and telecom. Those are the two major infrastructure. And then there is roads and railways is separate from this. I I mentioned this. We're part of an international organization, and we work a lot with the European government and the European Union in order to work with and have the legislations have an impact on us. So, and you have some more slides in the packages that shows this. I just thought I mentioned this a little bit. There's a little bit of what we do. And here is what I was thinking about the letter detectives. There are 70,000 letters per year that they actually figure out where they're supposed to be. And they're not all to Santa Claus. So it's, and we, as I said, we finance measures to make the networks robust. We measure in interference. This is really important because there's a lot of we have a large spectrum department that set strict rules for how the frequencies are supposed to be used. But either by mistake or by own interest, this is not always followed by all the licensees. So we have a group that's working with finding what's going on in this that are misusing the frequency licenses that they have received. And try to figure out what the problem is, and give them an instruction of following what they are obliged to do. And then we check a lot of low intense radio equipment, like radio controlled cars and other toys. I think mostly toys. And also then, as I mentioned, smart solutions for disabled and others. So this is really really a big thing. We have a competition each year for inventions, and the small startup firms that don't make it to the market themselves, and then when they, I think the first five and those, they get funding to kind of develop their inventions further in order to get to the market with them and get out on the market. If I then continue with, because I thought it would be interesting to connect what Mikael talked about with the how the market is developing and how this goes into how we work. And this, as I said, consumers want to make choices. And as it is developing and everyone is moving, I don't think this, now there are some slides that are not in the, we will make sure that you get all of these slides that are in this package as well. Because when I made it compact, compact for this session was changed a little bit too, I'm afraid. In the last minute, because I thought this could be some interesting added value for you. I hope it will be. Because the new possibilities that consumers can get now is that they can get higher speed. They can access everywhere, on every device, everything, everywhere. You get mobility. You don't have to just go to one place and do it. You can do it while on the move. And you demand quality and capacity because you want to see things. You don't want to miss out when the goal is being made in the major championship game in football, for example. If the network breaks down right now, then you're in trouble as a network owner, probably, or as a regulator, probably as well. And this, what they want is to get everything through the internet. And what is interesting, this is just the graph showing the what Mikael showed before, an enormous explosion in data volume. In Sweden, just, I mean, your data, Michael, was aggregated. This is the Swedish case. So and we have a high annual growth, between 40 and 60% a year, the last years. It's really growing quickly. And then the lower graph, which looks like a mountain ridge, but it's actually the flat line indicates the share of GDP that this sector represents in the Swedish market. And it's actually the case that it's the ICT sector is not growing in real terms. It's very stable, and it's stable profits for the operators. But it's definitely the case that the consumers, they get more for lower prices, basically. So it's a tough game for the operators. But there is a cost saving that goes on, and this of course enables more users to get more possibilities, which is a really, really good thing for society in that sense. And I'm convinced that one of the things that's driving this is the competition level that actually is representative for this market. And to then get to where we've come with our, so now we have 6 times Sweden in maps here. And the colors, and these are high-speed broadband in the look to the right, so we have, which is the wireless, that's, we have, it's termed here 3G Lite and 3G, but the what's 3G is HSPA, I think is the technical term. And both that and regular 3G with lower speed cover all of the population, basically. And as you can see, that doesn't mean the whole country. You have a yellow part where you don't have coverage, but you have a lot of almost everything everywhere in the south and a lot of places in the north. And then 4G is also, this is not exactly the same numbers as on the what I said, is more than 95%, but this is a moving target, so it's hard to have a map, and it's not an exact science to make these maps either. So, but it is very much that is actually covered. And I mentioned competition. We have several, both mobile networks operators, four major of them, and then we have some virtual networks operators as well that compete on this market. And they, of course, need frequencies in order to grow here. And this leads into what we work with as a spectrum strategy, because that is really important. Mikael has mentioned it. And what we want to be able to do here to get the long-term spectrum management is to get spectrum out on the market. That's really one of the things. It has to be there. And it has to be used efficiently. And we not just look at the absolute technological efficiency of the spectrum. We want to use it beneficial for the entire society. And I said that everyone wants to do everything everywhere on every device. And if you want to give the market a possibility to meet that goal, you have to give them the chance to do that, and spectrum is one of the solutions here. And we think that this is a way to meet that, where we can aid in meeting the needs of society.
How do you monitor the spectrum usage and compliance if you've given license?
That's
falling within your ambit.
It's very. We give very very clear borderlines between the different parts of the spectrum to the licensees, and they are very much overseen by each other, because if they don't follow what they're supposed to, all of a sudden they interfere with someone else. And then they will come to us and say that, and then we go out and measure and check and see what they do. And if we don't, then it's usually evident what has happened. And if you look at what the large operators do, the four major operators, they very much are in line of following what the requirements of their licenses are specifying. I mean, they really want to stay on the right-hand side. Because if they do, we can always take the license back. If they don't fulfill or follow the requirements of the license, we always have the possibility to revoke the license. And they know that. So it's in their own interest to really try to follow what they've agreed upon when they got the license or when they bought the license. And it, of course, this not for that reason. And I don't think it's not any of the big mobile licenses that has not happened. I think there are smaller for just personal radio systems and small things like that. There have been some incidences. There are local radio stations that want to be less local. That kind of turn up the power of their senders, and then all of a sudden they interfere. And I don't think we've taken them away. We have to go there and tell them to turn it back down to what it's supposed to be according to the agreement. And then they usually do that, and then you have some time passing, and then all of a sudden someone has hit that button again. So you have to go back there. But it's not a big problem. I don't know if you, Mikael, are working with. Yeah, that's right. We had. There is one, but they weren't forced to it. I think they decided voluntarily to return the license. So it's, because this then leads me into Mikael mentioned that different frequencies are good for different things. You have the low range frequencies that are very good for coverage. You have the higher range that you could use for capacity. And we've I think it's when thinking about how to work with this strategy. It's in real life terms. It's important. And you saw on our maps, and that's why I wanted to show them, that we, both for 2G, 3G, and 4G, we've reached a very good national coverage, even though the country is very sparsely populated. And I think what we've used all of these tools, I think, that Mikael mentioned, and I think it's very important that when we got to the 3G licensing, if we start there, that's not a very good coverage frequency that was licensed down. But and if you are going to build coverage with that, it's going to be very expensive. But we wanted to have as much coverage as possible from the Swedish perspective. And the decision was then not to have, because in the years when it was licensed in Europe, it was a lot of auctions in many of the countries. Probably may have heard of this. And it was around the IT bubble. And everyone was expecting a lot from all this. And the operators that were bidding for these frequencies bid a lot. And they almost killed themselves bidding afterwards because they didn't have any money then left to invest with, more or less, which affected you as an equipment sales company. But in the Swedish case, we did it a bit differently because we had, instead of an auction in the regular terms, we had with this band a beauty contest where one of the driving forces was that they promised to build coverage of population. And I think the winning bids, if you can call it that, or the ones that were judged to be the most beautiful in the beauty contest, it was, I think it was 99.3% of the population that they promised to cover. So it was really, really high. I mean, almost everyone, basically. And this is, of course, when they started then to fulfill this, they realized that this was quite burdensome when you run out in the more rural areas and try to fulfill that. And then we come to the second thing that is really important here, and that is that we wanted to have the competition of infrastructure where possible, where it's economically possible to have, but it won't be economically possible as we judged it in the whole country of Sweden most likely. So we said that you don't have to build everything on your own everywhere. It's okay to share, both from the perspective of putting equipment in the same base stations, but you could also share in the way of using the frequencies together. That would be okay to do that. But you had to build with 30% of your own, and of course then that led to the buildings where people are, where most people are. So we got a very, very strong parallel infrastructure competition in all the cities basically, and outside of the close areas of the cities. But as you go further out, we have the coverage, but they are actually cooperating in the sense that they are using each other's networks in putting up antennas or roaming with each other, depending on the type of agreements that they have, the commercial agreements that they have with each other. And we've looked at this and consider that this is actually good, because if we look at cost shares, which is an important part of this, is that if these costs of the part that they cooperate is small enough, they have enough room to diversify on the end user market with the rest of their business. And a lot of the rest of their business is marketing and trying to achieve a growing share of customers. And we had a lot of discussions with the Swedish competition authorities about this. And they came to the same conclusion, that this would be okay. That we have at least four operators on the Swedish market that are nationals. They are competing intensely with each other and keeping apart this from the cooperative part of the network business. So this started then in 2001 and has grown since then in both investments and in the cooperative parts of it. And it has really not been any issue of them not competing fiercely with each other. If you look at price levels, we are among the lowest prices in Europe on these services. And they are still profitable as operators. So I think they both have a very positive cost situation, but are still making money even though the prices are low. So I think this has really worked out as a good way. And I could just show you this, that they are cooperating. I think this may be part of the solution to it, that the way it turned out, because they are working with each other crosswise. So there's always two of them, of the four major operators, but they are cooperating with one another in different pairs, which means that it's not just two against two, but they're all of them together with each other in different situations, in different parts of either the 3G network or the 4G network. So this has resulted in companies that don't really trust each other, since they are competing so heavily, and you have really thick deals of these cooperation agreements, and a lot of lawyers that talk to each other and try to figure out how this should work out, and definitely a fierce competition. So I think that this has been quite important as a solution, and you could just to see how this has worked out, that's what we think is important. If you the conclusions of this collaboration is that it has really, really been only strictly looking on the provisioning of the capacity on the wholesale basis. This is important. So you keep it apart from what to do on the end users, and what we call the Chinese walls between these operations, so they don't have this cooperative part anything interfering with the competitive part of the business. And this is something that we oversee together with the Competition Authority of Sweden, try to look into this regularly. And the commonality of the cost, as I mentioned, is low, makes it easier for them to have differentiation of the services. And it has definitely, I think, improved the coverage of the country. So it's, I think maybe here we probably may have some comments or questions. So please.
When we're talking, I presume that particular point is about the wholesale network. The commonality of cost is low.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you manage? How many sort of network players are there in the wholesale region? And do you get them to agree on a price? Is there a regulating price mechanism there?
How they distribute the costs of this in between them, we don't regulate. What we do regulate is the traffic that they have the interconnection. That is regulated from a price perspective, and also that they have to open the networks for each other in that sense. But how they do these deals of sharing the infrastructure and otherwise, we have not had any reason to suspect any problems with it. But we have done the calculations of the, by just looking at it, they're all, we can all look into their, as regulators, we can look into their bookkeepings and had accountants look at how these shares look compared to each other and what it seemed to be in the terms of indications of any cooperation. We haven't found that. We don't see that. And we can also see on the end user market that they are definitely competing very, very hard with each other. That's very clear. But if you are concerned, which one should be, about a sustainable competitive market, it's always very, you get worried when you let parts of a market cooperate about things, because you never know when they start talking about other things also, and all of a sudden they talk about market division of market shares from geographical perspective perhaps, or from a price perspective, and it could of course happen, but our judgment here has been that the benefits for society of having these cooperations have definitely been greater than at least the cost so far, and it doesn't seem to pose any threat to competitions at all. Not yet. I mean, we are looking at them all the time. So and not just us, as I said, the competition authority that only looks at these type of issues are looking very intensely. I mean, they have their heads up on this all the time because we know that this is an issue. So it's
According to
So on the issue Honourable Sheen has raised on the cartels, and you said you're looking at them, but how do you do that?
By following their, we look into what the, of course that there's always, if there is a really intense, I mean very, very advanced cartel, then you have to, then it's really, I guess, hard to, but the cartels we found in Sweden have been that someone kind of give them away, that you happen, and you have a lot of suspicion before that. That is some, because usually you see it from price formation, that you don't have the good price competition that you should expect, or competition in different type of products or offers for the consumers. And I think what we have seen is a continued innovation in new products and switches in business models, especially now when we've gone from the traditional telephony and texting as the best sources of revenue to more of the data buckets and what Mikael talked about. And they've kind of been over-trumping each other in coming up with new ideas how to produce these new buckets and consumer offers. And I think that would not happen if they were not competing. You definitely see a dynamics in this market that, and we also compare it to other countries, as I said. We have among the lowest prices in Europe on these type of products. And that would be also, I think, if that all of a sudden switches, so they start to climb in that scale or that stairway, that then I would think you would have to raise a flag and wonder what's going on. Are they starting to talk to each other in a new way now? But we haven't seen that. And so we are not at the moment worried about it. But we are concerned, so we always look at it. Just to show you also that we talked about because this was one way of giving out the frequencies. This was the 2.1 megahertz frequencies that are the 3G. Then we've had the 900 megahertz, which is the GSM 2G frequencies, and these are the major operators, and they have a share of all of the frequencies, and this, I think this is important to get the balance here, that at least we would strive to get that, that not any one operator should have too much frequencies of any sort to dominate, and you should have a mixture of all of them. So we wanted that to happen, and then they've kind of worked that their way through our auctions in a way to get to picture where they now have a fairly decent balance. So they have both good coverage frequencies and good capacity frequencies. So they can do a mixture of being everywhere, but also supplying a high capacity. Because what we, Mikael was mentioning that when we did our first step in the digital dividend, giving out the 800 megahertz band, which is for the first old TV, analog TV band that we have used to move over to digital broadband, we did it through an auction. But we also realized that we still had places where we didn't have coverage. So we made sure that we connected it with a coverage obligation. Because, and I think that's very important to note what Mikael said there, that it's very hard to add this later on. It's much better to put it on top of everything from the beginning. But you should also think of, which is, I guess, an experience, because the beauty contest that they participated in for the 3G, it was actually a bit, I think, they overbid each other. And the Orange, as Mikael mentioned, one company, they realized that this was too tough that they had promised. So it was not that we took the license back, but they actually came and you can have it, and gave it back to us. Because they lost trust in the business case of being able to build, to meet their own requirements of coverage and still make it work. So then another company took over and continued to build. And what proved to be the big problem in making this happen was that this average coverage, it was to get building permits for base stations and getting clearance to putting cables in the ground to the base stations. And all that took much longer time than anyone had expected. So that was a lot of the practice that kind of were slow in admitting this to happen in the different parts of Sweden, which is which then leads me to my last part here, which is the importance of cooperation. Sorry.
Before you move on,
yep.
you spoke about the issue of auction in terms of spectrum. Tell me how it's done, and do the big players still participate, or how are you managing it, the interest thereof? I'll tell you why I'm asking this, because at times you find that if the big players and on more the new entrants do not compete within, it does not. Maybe it's my understanding, it would not make sense. It wouldn't give the benefit that we want to do.
It's, I think that here you have the, it's a delicate balance, and you have to think of both what the main purpose of the band is that you are considering. I mean, for example, if it's been, that's in our case then, the 800, we thought that this is a good band for coverage, area coverage. So how do we use that in the best way? And then we also do a survey in the market. I mean, are you interested in this band and in what respect? And then we get answers from the operators. And then for the 800 band, it was very clear that the interest was much bigger than the supply of the band. We ask and test. And then, because if there's not enough demand, then we could either give it away or keep it until there is demand. And when we realized that there was demand, that there was a lot of demand, which we expected it to be, we had 2 times 30 megahertz in the band that was supposed to be used for this. And we wanted to ensure that not just one operator bought everything. So we put a spectrum cap on how much you could buy. So you couldn't buy more than 10, 2 times 10. And the blocks were 5 megahertz. So you could buy two of those 2 times 5 megahertz to get maximum 10. And what you see here is that you have for the 800 column, it's HI3G, which was an entrant in the 3G beauty contest. They started there. You have Telia Sonera, which is the old incumbent on, if you can call that, old incumbent on the market. And then there is what is called net for mobility. And within parentheses there, you see T2 plus TN. This means that it is a joint venture or company between Tele2 and Telenor, which are the other two major operators on the mobile market. So they together, in their own joint company, bid and got the third part of 10 megahertz. So those three shared this, and this was a lot of very much discussions when we put on this ceiling of how much you could buy as one single operator, because the incumbent wanted out. They said that you need to get the efficiencies from a technical perspective, you need to have at least 20, and so you should be allowed to buy 20. But we thought, and this is not an exact science in that respect, but we thought it was important to get more even distribution, then really ensure that, than seeing the possibilities to having one buy more or less everything of it. So this is a balance you have to think of, and I think it's really important to exchange experiences with markets where this has been done, because you can see how it then turned out, and maybe when you are in process of doing this. And I think it actually worked very well. They used them. We made it very neutral. They're using their existing 2G network, putting up this new equipment in them. So they have the infrastructure in place from a base station perspective. That's why it has become very quick for the operators to get a 4G coverage, because they use the same base station. The problem is that you also need a quick or fast backhaul. So that has taken a while to get, either through what's called microwave or the fiber to the base stations. That has been something that has, of course, taken a little bit more time. But to get the coverage, that turned out to be a very, very, very quick So that's part. Thank you. And please, if you have more questions later on, please send email. I could be happy to direct you to, because this is something that if we continue to talk about, if you want more information about this auctioning, we have a lot of information on our homepage that I can help you find, that is in English. So it's because we know that this is something that is important and interesting for many to read about. So we've translated a lot of the documentation around our auctions. So I'll be happy to guide you to that and help you find that and put you in contact with the real experts on this auction design, because it's a science in itself, trying to figure out how to set up these auctions in a way to get it the most efficiently from a solution perspective. Yes.
Thank you. Just on the auctions, I'd be interested to know, have you engaged, through you, Chairperson, have you engaged with our regulator, ICASA, and have you had discussions with them and knowledge sharing information sessions?
Yes, that's what part of the, you could say a bit more that, Schlepsi, but the two-day workshop we had, ICASA was present, and we've had with the organization Business Sweden, there was a workshop in, was it October last year? Let's see, here in South Africa. And then in April, we were here visiting ICASA and having a seminar with them. And they've also been in Stockholm engaging with us. So we're having a dialogue, which is very good, I think, definitely. So I hope that we will come. But I think the common interest from both of us as regulators is that we will continue this dialogue onwards. Any other questions on that? Otherwise, I just would like to show the one part here where we have worked a lot with what we then consider a rural policy challenge also. And as I said, we worked with the frequencies. We've also worked with getting this goal of 100 megabits definitely to everyone, which means that you have to come over the problem of seeing a business case in areas where you have just less than 4 people per square kilometers, whereas there are like 1,500 people per square kilometer in the dense area. And this to get to people that really want and need the same things, regardless of where you live, basically. So this is definitely a challenge. And what this slide illustrates is, if you have someone representing the market, they don't see it. They don't see what can we do here. Where is the possibilities? And the growth of, and here I think the growth of demand is so interesting, because you have people living in these areas and they want to get high-speed broadband, and they have a lot of the issue. This goes both for getting fiber to base stations and also getting fiber to in these areas in Sweden. We realized that, we put together then interest groups, and this is what we call the Swedish Broadband Forum, which is headed by the infrastructure, the Minister of Infrastructure, which is heading our authority. And we put together, there's more than 100 organizations together, and there is a steering board which she is heading. Our Director General is part of the steering board, and the different market players in terms of operators are present, government stakeholders in terms of the government, and of course with her in the lead. There's the broadcasting companies, Sweden Television, there's us, PTS, as the regulator. You have local and regional associations, the municipality networks, the municipality workers association or employers association. And then on the demand side, there's also consumer advocates, so those groups that also are involved in this. So what has happened is that instead of having this in different interest groups sitting and complaining in different places and writing articles and letters to each other and to the government complaining of why not this is happening, why not that is happening. So what we did was we put them all together in one room and started to discuss interesting issues of why are not these investments being happening. And the conclusions were quite quickly that it's not economically viable to make them. There's no business case. could be a business case, which is, of course, sounds very easy. But how do you do that? Well, the conclusion was that the farmers, which is in many times is that this is the case, they have a tractor or equipment to do the digging. You want to get some kind of digging, because that's in the Swedish case, that's 65-70% of the cost, basically, to get the trench dug. And they could put in their own equipment and time, do the digging. And then all of a sudden, there was a case. The operator said, well, then we may be, it may be possible for us to make a calculation here that actually works out. And then we came to, our part was very important too, because you had to make this in a way that you don't make an island of a small network out in a rural village. It has to be connected then to the big network, so everyone gets connected to the real internet. And here we came in as a harmonizing association and could point at different stakeholders in order to make this happen, so it didn't just end up in on its own. And everyone was very keen on this to really get along. And this is what it looks like. This is an example of actual farmers and their equipment in the background, and they're digging a trench where they put down the fiber network. And so far, we've done it with 800 local action groups that have built their own networks in Sweden in different villages. And more than 100,000 households now have been connected, and they have fiber all the way to the farm, basically. That's what they get. So, but we have, as I say, 8,000 rural villages to go. There is still some work to do. But it's also, this, I think, and of course this doesn't mean that everyone should dig and put fiber everywhere, because what I think is the real lesson here to be learned, at least the way we see it, and this has been going on now for 4 years, and this broadband forum is considered to be a great success, really, in the Swedish society for this purpose. And I think it is that you put the civil society, the marketplaces, and the governmental agencies and government together, and you really, really have a dialogue on a horizontal line, and you identify hurdles for these investments to happen, and thus you manage to find models to make the business case possible, so you actually get the investments also in the rural areas here, which I think is quite nice. So I think we're very happy with this, and it's not happening by itself. You need, I think that's why it's important to have the minister being on top of this and being very certain that this is something that we're going to drive for, because that makes it people believe in it. It's a long-term engagement in this, and there's both from the political side and also from the operators, which actually see this as a business opportunity they can count on and for some time. So I think, and the users are definitely there. They think this is so important to get this access, because all of a sudden they can stay on their farms, they can have their children there, and they get access to education and can do their homework in a much better way than they could do otherwise, which is fantastic, we think. That's really great. So by that I conclude, and I'm really happy to answer some more questions. Yes?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a final comment, and that's exactly the last thing you said. In terms of urbanization being a mega trend for the future, and certainly we face diverse problems where we find increasingly many of our people in the rural communities come to the cities, flock to the cities, where they place a huge burden on municipalities as they try to cope in terms of housing, in terms of health services, in terms of education. If you can roll out the communications to rural communities so they are connected virtually, I think that'll go a long way to solving the problems of mass urbanization. Thank you. Thank you. It was a great presentation.
Thank you. I definitely agree. Very, thank you. Very, 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 very good comment. It creates cost savings for the municipalities once the network is in place. Just by, it could be from health care costs that they have otherwise, that you have to go everywhere all the time. All of a sudden, you can maybe stay longer in your home when you're old, or you can be at least you can have a surveillance that is quick enough that you actually can trust it. For example, and there's many things that you could cost for municipalities. I think I definitely agree. Thank you. Thank you, Jay. I think now we will have the last part on the technology development.
Difficult to motivate operators to build out coverage nationwide, because it costs so much unless you have a possibility to do active and passive network sharing. So this issue of having broadband for all and coverage in the rural areas, that is the thing I think all countries struggle with. And there is a very fundamental physical reason why it's difficult. And if you would, for instance, open up the 900 megahertz spectrum or introduce new spectrum in the 700 or 800, then that would facilitate a lot. And then if you would allow them to share networks in the rural areas, that would be even better. And then we are also suggesting for you to consider to also include coverage requirements in the licensing of new spectrum in the 700 and 800 to motivate them even more to build out. Then I think we will see some dramatic changes when it comes to building out coverage for broadband services in the whole country. So these are some fundamental aspects here.
Ruiche, if I may go on that slide again. I think this is one of the areas where maybe I think most countries, probably South Africa, would also kind of have to deal with when broadcasters move out of the digital band. And it's a very important, I guess, aspect in terms of what the current players in the market can do or are able to do based on what they have in terms of the law of physics of what can be done at what end, versus when the spectrum gets freed up and then how then it gets made available into the market, and how, looking on what Michael both said as well, how does that then the policy maker, the regulator as well, takes that into consideration to make sure that we fill the gaps that you have in the rural areas. I think it's a very important aspect, maybe that where the policy makers can be able to think different permutation that could possibly, with the leverage of that, use that to be able to bring the rural areas into the digital age as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good comment. Then we have this technology evolution, technology change in use in the world. And of course, as always, there are different things happen differently at different speeds in the different worlds. And here we have the situation 2013-2019 in the different regions here, North America, Latin America, Western Europe, Central, Eastern Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Asia Pacific. And we can see in the Middle East, Africa, our understanding is that at the end of last year, there were approximately 85% of all mobile subscriptions in the region were GSM, GSM and Edge, and some 15% approximately used 3G. And here we're going to see a tremendous change in the next 5 years, where a lot of people in Africa and Middle East will get new smartphones and thereby also get 3G first of all, thanks to the affordability of the 3G phones, and a good number, about 10%, will have acquired an LTE, 4G LTE smartphone and a tablet, etc. This is very much driven, of course, both of available devices and the network coverage. For 4G LTE, that is being introduced now quickly in the world, what does it really mean for people on the street? I often get questioned, what is the difference between 3G and 4G? And it's, you can say that there is a difference of 10 times the speed. it's also much quicker. The latency is much shorter in 4G, so it is a much better user experience. However, 3G is also being improved all the time as 4G LTE. So I think that if the reference is 2G GSM, there will be a tremendous quality of service improvement going to 3G, and then in time for when networks in LTE and also more affordable devices are becoming available. So there is a roadmap of getting better and better speed, better and better services with 3G and then 4G. So depending on what the needs for services and is, there is a whole kind of portfolio of services and different kinds of devices that are available to the market. This is a global map of countries that have introduced LTE, and our understanding is that you have LTE services in South Africa, as in most countries in the world, and this deployment of LTE has gone really, really fast. So it's very encouraging from that point of view. Now, this doesn't show the coverage in a country, of course, and usually, and as is also the case with LTE, deployments have taken place from the cities and out. So the countries are obviously not fully covered. Now, since traffic is increasing tremendously year by year, and in particular for rural areas where coverage is more difficult to build out, we have since a few years started to collaborate with the various broadcasting and harmonization bodies in Europe and Asia to see if we could collaborate in a good way with broadcasters. And as you may know, when you build broadcasting networks, you are not using all frequencies everywhere. There are kind of wide spaces in between the broadcasting transmitters because of interference. You cannot use all the frequencies in all broadcasting cells. And there has been a lot of discussions about how to utilize these wide spaces. And now we talk about the 470 to 694 megahertz bands that have not yet been allocated to anything else but the broadcasting. The 700 band and 800 band, these two bands are above 694. So this is a further kind of suggestion how to use these white spaces. And there are proposals to use it for unlicensed and use it for Wi-Fi kind of services. And our position is that we think this spectrum is far too valuable to use for unlicensed services because the spectral efficiency is about 10% of the spectral efficiency if you would use it for licensed spectrum. And also, why would a government give away all this spectrum for free? And there is obviously a very high value to it in terms of auction fees, etc., that can be brought in this way. So. Bo has talked a little bit about this before, and I commented also in the beginning. This is kind of a summary of best practice regulation that we have seen in the different dialogues we have globally, what has been successful policy and regulations to drive coverage in the rural areas. we talked about coverage requirements that are included in new spectrum licensing for instance, the 800 and 700 bands. We talked about to allow passive and active sharing. We talked about technology neutral licenses, so it would be possible for operators to reform and migrate and introduce new, more efficient technologies in the already existing bands, 900 and 1800. And also, given the fact that we see a convergence in services and people are using their smartphones and tablets and PCs also to watch TV and video, etc., we think for the sake of consumer demands, it would be good also to have service neutral licensing that would support consumer demands, and but also a lot of possibilities for innovation in this area. So it's very exciting, the prospects of 3G evolution and then 4G, etc. But as I started out saying that the world will never be as slow as it has been in the last 10, 20 years going forward. And already since a few years, the fifth generation mobile telephony research has started, and there are lots of activities in many parts in the world. And while it is still a research area, we are beginning to kind of see the contours of what should be the requirements on 5G and the objectives with 5G to allow for a network society where we have self-driving cars, we have efficient utility networks that can give feedback to the consumers to preserve the consumption of natural resources, etc., etc. And that has led to requirements in five categories, and requirements on these then future networks, saying that it needs to be able to handle 1,000 times the data volume that we have today. And there should be possible to connect 10 to 100 times the number of connected devices. And data rates will go up to several gigabits per second. And the latency should come down to 1 millisecond, and this is about 10 to 20 times as fast as the LTE 4G networks. And why do you need that? Well, if you ask an electricity company, if they have a problem with their networks, they need to be able to switch off and on things very, very rapidly. And if you are in a self-driving car and there is an accident, I'm sure we will all appreciate a very fast reaction. Because if it would be 50 milliseconds, maybe we will hit the car in front of us, etc., etc. And we also see that there will be applications for sensors and other things that you just want to deploy and basically forget about. You cannot go there and change battery every fifth year. So we talk about battery lifetime of maybe 15, 20 years for certain kind of sensors, etc. And if we can expand the capabilities of the technology in this way, we think it is very appropriate to talk about the horizontal infrastructure on top of which you can serve basically all the different communication and media consumption needs. Very much similar to the electricity grid. I mean, we don't have a separate grid for different applications as we don't have for roads, etc. And we think with 5G we should be able to meet requirements for public safety networks, for utilities networks, etc., etc. So we are a fair amount of the 600 pure researchers we have at Ericsson are occupied with this right now. We have 25,000 research and developers in total, and 600 of those are working in pure research. actually this is my last slide, and coming back to going with the mainstream is something I think very, very important, because it will lower risk, it will maximize benefits, because it means there will be interest from many companies to participate, there will be a lot of choice, volumes will be high, prices will be low. But since if volumes are high, it's okay that prices are low also from a provider point of view, of course. And here we see it started with GSM some 20 years ago. We added 3G HSPA, 4G LTE. We are getting into LTE Advanced, which will bring up the data speeds to a couple of hundred megabit per second. And then the future access systems or fifth generation mobile telephony that will start up, we think, in conjunction with the opening of the Olympic Games in Tokyo 2020. And then it will start to be deployed during 2022, maybe 2025 in many parts of the world. So harmonization, working with other policymakers in the region and try to agree on what is the right thing for this region to go, that would be very positive, I think. So that was all for me on this, and if there are questions or comments, I'd like happy to respond to that.
Thank you, Mita. The collaboration between Ericsson on 5G and other companies like Siemens, Nokia Networks, for example, do you collaborate in the development of this technology, or are you pursuing it individually and first to market gets the benefit of that development?
That is a very good question. Thank you for that. Well, our industry, I would say since the outset with GSM, we have, it's like a cycle, and since communication systems, they have to be interoperable. So we have learned that in order to establish a market and to get the interest from consumers, we need to collaborate intensively in the beginning. And in the very early phases that we have and still are with 5G, we also get support from the European Union and the corresponding regional bodies in other parts of the world for basic research. And the first major 5G project in Europe, then Ericsson was the project leader, but you had NSN and all other big vendors, also the Chinese, and also big operators and universities were all in this collaboration. And what happens then when you have kind of scoped the objective of a new generation technology is that it enters the standardization phase. And that's when you do the detailed specifications in order to allow for Samsung to develop a device and for Ericsson to develop the infrastructure and for many, many other players in the ecosystem to develop its part of the this ecosystem. And at the end of the day, we want to have a big choice of different devices and our customers, even though they love Ericsson, I'm sure they also want to buy from NSN and others, or have the possibility, and everything needs to work together. So we collaborate a lot in the initial phases, and then we compete fiercely when there is business on the table to when our customers do procurement. Then we of course compete very, very intensively, and somewhere during this phase when you work in standardization and when you get into the commercial phase, then you will see a lot of pilots.
know from history that defense is always ahead of the game when it comes to innovation, especially on technology. So you gave us a time frame of sort of 2020, 2025 for this kind of evolution to mature. Is it possible that much of this is already in place through defense agencies? And I'm thinking specifically of the United States, for example, that spends 10 times more on defense than its next 10 nations in the world, that they are developing something like this already, and that this kind of technology might come to market sooner. I'll tell you why. In 2025, I'm going to be 65, and I'm going to be dead, so I would like to be around to see it. That's why I asked the question.
Thank you. That's a good comment. Then I can say that we have exactly the same wish, because it seems we are on the same birth year. I will also retire if everything is on plan. Well, of course, many aspects can exist in very specialized applications like super low battery life or battery consumption, etc. I think that could very well happen in military applications, etc. What Ericsson used also to have defense business until maybe 10 years ago. We developed very advanced radar systems for airplanes and ground forces, etc. Very, very advanced. But when mobile telephony spread and the volumes, I mean, the smartphones are manufactured in billions. I would say that and they are super high tech, of course, to be able to provide with those services in a very small form factor, etc. So much of the technology to keep up with what the technology can deliver is overtaken by consumer electronics. So therefore, since 10 years ago, we sold the defense business unit to Saab Technologies, also a Swedish company, because we didn't need it to be able to have access to this very advanced technology. We had the volumes and the business big enough in our radio base station and the mobile phones business that could help us to fund the research and development in very advanced radio technology. But to go from a very specialized and super expensive kind of application to something that will be sitting in everyone's pocket on the earth, you really need to work on standardization and to drive down cost and interoperable things and involve lots of basic research. And this is, I think, one of the major achievements with research we do for 4G and now for 5G, etc. So we make this super high performing technologies affordable for everyone. But I don't know if that was the answer, but I'm very curious to get my hands on this technology also before I'm getting too old.
I think just a small clarity on the area of LTE in the next year, the 4G stuff. We see, talk about the increased network efficiency. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in the capacity of this efficiency. You know, the construction work we're doing, sometimes we are splitting road areas, whether in an open space or around the mountainous areas, the network goes off. Does this one have the capacity to, you know, capture communication in such areas?
Well, I think both 3G and LTE can perform really, really well and deliver good broadband speeds with high quality of service. But what happens when the quality of service is deteriorating is that you run out of capacity because there is too much traffic in the network, and that will increase the interference and making the and affecting the quality of service of your connection to the internet. Or it can be at the cell border, so the coverage is the key issue. These are perhaps the two major ones. And what I wanted to say here is that one way to improve the quality in the networks, both in the rural areas, but these coverage bands, they also have, it's much easier for them to penetrate buildings also, in our homes and offices, and I mean in a room like this. So they can penetrate the buildings and it's easier to get a good connection for internet or for voice, etc., in the mobile phones.
Thank you, sir. If I can just also add on my colleague Mikhail just said, on the issue of increased network efficiency, if you look at the LTE and compare it with its predecessors like HSPA, NGSM, Edge and so on, you will see that in terms of the throughput or the capacity that you get from technology is much more. If you compare it in terms of megabits per megahertz, because wireless technologies use the wireless spectrum to be transmitted to the end user. Now, if you look at how much throughput or capacity can be delivered at the end user side with a certain amount of spectrum, with LTE you can deliver much more capacity at the end user with a limited capacity of spectrum. So as the technologies evolve, they are now becoming able to carry more traffic, to carry more capacity than with the initial versions of the technology. So that's also what it means in terms of increased efficiency. So you utilize the spectrum more efficiently. That is why also it is important for the industry or the operators to be allowed to evolve the technologies or to reform the spectrum without having to go through a lot of red tapes, without having to go through a lot of bureaucratic processes. And South Africa, I think, is one of the good examples saying that if you look at our operators in South Africa, they have been able to launch LTE with the limited spectrum that they have in bands like 800 MHz, for instance. They are now doing LTE in those bands, and thanks to the technology neutral licensing which South Africa affords. Thank you.
Even be more
able or more informative when we engage our own stakeholders in the issues that we've been able to flag. So you've not only don't think that what we have done is not valuable, these documents are going to become something like even a reference book, because we definitely look at some of the issues that you've raised. I mean, the number of issues that you've raised, Dr. Anderson, around regulatory, that I think ICASA can learn a lot. And I'm happy that they were part of the team. So there's quite a number of areas that we should be able to learn. How are you rolling out the broadband and all that? And we should be able, as South Africa, to take that as a lesson. So I think we're moving very slow in a number of areas. We have policy, but it's the implementation part of it that is sort of lacking. So that's why I wanted to just give this few words to say thank you for the presentation. We really appreciate it. I've given the task to the whip of the committee to just thank everybody who's here, who came, because it's not easy. You had to, you know, it's really valuable for us if we get this opportunity to interact with you and we don't have to spend much. For me as a chairperson, it saves a lot in my budget, which is very limited. I think, let me give to you just to do the vote of thanks.
In a way, we have said it all, that we really appreciate you availing yourself to come to our restroom. Like you have said, that this is a new committee, and show some of the questions who can just have a sense that some of us are the BBTs, you know, people who are born before technology. So we're still trying to find our way through, getting to, you know, adapt to the terminology of this ICT. And also in our work, we have to make sure that we guard against unintended consequences that I said. They are just the realities of life that you cannot run away from. That as much as we like to develop, at the same time, we have something that was not planned for, that people will be out of jobs. But that's a message to all employers, you know, to train employees to be multi-skilled, that when the time comes, they're not found, you know, being redundant. They still have to do something and also be trained. So they are also operators of the same, you know, development. And it's important for us as members of the committee to be skilled so that you can do oversight over all stakeholders. Because if you don't understand this field, they will always run away with NEDA. You know, we're being assisted by the Competition Commission, like the members just left talking about the cartels. They're always there, especially where there's a big competition, but Competition Commission is there to guard against it. But it doesn't mean their presence, you know, scares them. They're just arrogant. People can do whatever when it comes to profits. But we do oversight, even if we'd like to be in offices, you know, operating these gadgets, but we are compelled, you know, by the kind of work we're doing to go out and see physically what things, how things are being done. Like from time to time, we'll get complaints about the long queues, people not being serviced. But we think if many people can adapt to this technology, you know, it minimize those queues, reduce the queues, save time. They'll just, you know, be on the system. I was talking to a colleague here, Member McCain, that says never been there to the bank for a long time. Say, I'm always there because I'm afraid. So we have this sometimes fear of the unknown. But I think as we go on, really will learn to do them and be able to campaign. And from your presentation here, it shows that your rural development, you know, system is really running. You know, if we have that number of people being, you know, using these gadgets, really we applaud you. And I think we'll copy a thing or two, because we also have that as our priority, the rural development, as much as you have areas of job creation. Like we say, you have to guard against it. But we thank you, and we think this is not the last time that you meet, because you don't only learn once, then get to know the thing. They say practice makes perfect. Maybe one day each chair will be in Sweden, seeing these things with your naked eye. But at his expense, it's a very big question. Maybe the chair will deal with that one. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Oh, you need to mobilize. For. Oh. I think I must blame the team now. They are causing havoc in the community. Okay. With those, I think that's why we asked the whip of the committee just to do a vote of thanks. I know the two gentlemen are traveling to back home to Sweden. Travel safely. Thanks for Tadiso for coordinating. Dr. Magofan, thank you very much as well. In that note, I think we are going to close the meeting, and thank you very much. And apologies, you know, with members, they had to run. I think I must alert Maseko that she mustn't come back because we are done. Thank you very much, and travel safely.